We're going to be joined right now by Howard Beck, NBA writer for the Bleacher Report. Howard, good morning. This is Katie and Matt. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
Well, I'm doing well. How have you been with all of the chaos that has been going on the last few days?
Well, you know, it's not my chaos, so, you know. I mean, I'd rather be in my position right now just trying to assess what's going on than to be, say, the owner or GM of the Cleveland Cavaliers or to be a Cavaliers fan. You know, it's amazing how quickly these things change that, you know, the high of 13 months ago, Cleveland celebrating its first championship in any sport in over a half century. Mm-hmm. And here we are a short time later and, you know, LeBron, you know, seemingly has one foot out the door. Maybe Kyrie Irving is demanding a trade. You know, it just all comes crashing down so quickly. And, you know, it's a little, you know, it's dizzying, even for those of us on the outside.
Yeah, and it's, for me, for some time now, Howard, I've felt like something is going to happen in Cleveland. There's just, even going back to before the draft, when Jimmy Butler's name was being linked in trade talks, and then reports came out that actual players on that Cleveland roster had reached out to him and was like, man, you don't want to come here. It's too tumultuous. There's too much stuff going on. And I kind of got the feeling at that point that there's more going on behind the scenes than we're aware of, which is mind-boggling in the sense of the success that they've had for the last few years. But how surprised were you when the news came out that on July 7th, Kyrie actually asked for a trade? Was that shocking to you, or is that something that you're like, okay, I could see this happening?
No, I think it is shocking. I don't think anybody really saw it coming. I mean, listen, there were rumblings in Cleveland about Kyrie not necessarily being happy, and it's been interesting the last few days as everybody starts going through the transcripts of old interviews and, you know, bringing back those quotes. There were plenty of times where Kyrie Irving kind of alluded to the idea that, hey, it's not easy necessarily to play the sidekick role, the Robin role to LeBron's Batman, that it's been an adjustment. And everyone, you know, pointed out accurately that just before LeBron arrived, Kyrie had signed a fat new extension as the franchise star. Mm-hmm. And they had no success with him in that role. But, you know, he thought this was going to be his team going forward. And all of a sudden, one of the greatest players in history comes marching back in saying, my show now. Now, that said, you go to three straight finals, you win a championship, and you have kind of success that you know, you didn't even sniff before. And I think, you know, for most people, you'd think, look, it's not bad. It's not bad being number two to one of the greatest players of all time. It's not, no one's asking you to be number two to, you know, just some fellow all-star. You know, it's not like number two to Jimmy Butler or number two to Paul George. I mean, these are great players, but they're not LeBron, right? LeBron's a generational player, a Mount Rushmore type. It's an honor to be the number two to that guy. So the shocking part of it is that Kyrie Irving's own self-interest is so magnified in his own head that it trumps being next to LeBron James mm-hmm. for at least one more season. And even if you think LeBron's leaving next year, and that's not his, from what we know, his cited reason for wanting to leave, even if you thought LeBron was leaving in a year, you give yourself one more chance to make another title run, because wherever Kyrie's going next year, unless it's the Warriors, he's not winning a title in 2018.
Howard Beck of Bleacher Report joining us. Howard, do you really believe that it's or Kyrie's number one reason for wanting a trade is because he wants to be the number one guy, or is he looking at the state of Cleveland, their lack of direction, their lack of a general manager, what owner Dan Gilbert's doing, and think, man, this is a dumpster fire waiting to happen. I want to get out while I still can.
If those things are true, he and his people have done a really lousy job of conveying that message in the last 72 hours. The story broke Friday afternoon. Everybody has jumped on it since. And you've got dozens and dozens of reporters looking into this. And, you know, now Kyrie Irving is abroad right now on, I don't know, a shoe tour or whatever. But listen, there are various ways of making sure you get your message out there. And if the narrative that has emerged as the first wave of being that Kyrie simply wants his own team, which, by the way, given his makeup, given the things he has said, given the way he plays, given what we know of his personality, is not a stretch. Like, that's a very believable premise. Whether these other things have some bearing, the things you alluded to, Dan Gilbert being kind of a lousy owner, the ridiculous handling of the David Griffin situation and the subsequent departure of David Griffin, the time it's taken to get a new GM in place, the fact that there have been no real roster upgrades. Those are real reasons to be concerned. But look, in most situations, you say you go to management or you do whatever you have to do to use your own leverage and say, guys, get it together or I will be out of here. But he's got 2 years left in his deal. And again, at least 1 year left with the LeBron, Kevin Love core that he's demanding a trade now. It doesn't seem like that's about the direction of the franchise. They're not falling off a cliff. They're still the best team in the East as we speak right now. They are still the team that is the odds-on favorite to go back to the finals right now. So we can talk about dysfunction all we want. We've all seen dysfunction. I covered the Lakers for 7 years. There was dysfunction. But people weren't screaming to get out amid finals runs.
So from the Cavaliers' standpoint then, Howard, do you think it's in their best interest for them to hold on to Kyrie despite him wanting to be gone and make another run? Or would it be in their best interest to maybe try and package him now and get good young talent or good pieces right away?
That's a really tricky question. I think the problem is, you know, can you assuage his concerns, whatever they may be? If what he really wants is to simply have his own team and to not be playing with LeBron anymore, there's nothing you can tell him really other than, listen, we think LeBron's gone next summer. Be the dutiful teammate for one more year and then the whole franchise is yours. I mean, I guess you could, that would be one pitch. Another pitch would simply be, you know, look, we are fully, you know, hearing your concerns and we want to make sure that you are happy in your career. But listen, we can't break this up right now. We need to play this out to the extent that we can and try to make another finals run. And who knows, the Warriors have an injury or something. You might be on the championship, you know, stage again next June. I don't know if there's anybody in the franchise who's capable, whether it's LeBron himself, whether it's the new GM, Kobe Altman, whether it's Dan Gilbert. I don't know if there's anybody who can convince him otherwise. So holding on to him, you know, if you've got an unhappy Kyrie Irving going into camp, you're taking some risk.
Howard Beck of the Bleacher Report joining us this morning on The Drive. The way I look at this is that Kyrie Irving has zero leverage. He says he wants out, but he has plenty of time left on his contract. Then you look at the flip side of things where LeBron James has come out and said that he will not waive his no trade clause and that he wants to remain with the team next season. But he's also not saying, Howard, that he's going to remain after that, which has been, there's already been so many rumors about his eventual departure from Cleveland the second time. So if you're the Cavaliers right now, I agree with you. They're the best roster in the East, without a doubt. But what are your options heading into this? Because can you go and legitimately have another title run when there seems to be such a toxic environment within that team?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how toxic the environment is. If Kyrie is there and he's unhappy, then there's the toxic environment. If Kyrie settles down and decides he's okay with staying, there's not a toxic environment. I mean, look, there's clearly been some upheaval in the front office, and there's some, you know, I think valid concerns about their direction, but the roster is fine. It's not any better than it was. It's not going to get any better, I don't think, but it was good enough to get to the finals again and probably will be again. So I don't think that there is a concern about a toxic environment except for whatever Kyrie himself might bring to it. But you're right. He doesn't have a no trade clause. There's 2 years left on his deal. He really has no true leverage other than the threat of creating, a bad environment mm-hmm. by being an unhappy camper if he's still there in October.
And with all of this news coming out, and I think it shocked a lot of people, obviously, because most people can't wrap their brain around someone that is playing on a team like the Cavs that have been to 3 straight finals, won one of them. You're playing next to the best player in the world. I don't think people can wrap their brain around someone saying, hey, I want to be the guy I want out of this, because this is a situation where you're putting yourself in a position to win another title. So when you look at this, all of the rumors that are now coming out about teams that are interested, and of course the Kings were involved in that, and I've been telling people all morning, don't put any validity in those rumors that the Kings are willing to package De'Aaron Fox and Kostas Koufos to take on Kyrie Irving. What is your take on that? What do you know about that situation specifically?
Well, every team in the league that needs a point guard or that needs a franchise star, I think, is almost obligated to at least check in with the Cavaliers and see what it would take. And the Kings are in that category. We don't know if De'Aaron Fox is a franchise star yet. We don't know if anybody on that roster is a franchise star. We don't know. You know, now, look, they've chosen a path. They have loaded up on young talent, and some of it some very good and intriguing young talent. They've plugged in a couple of veterans to try to help the kids along, and I like what the Kings are doing right now. They're in a good place. There's a discernible, definable direction right now for the first time in a while. That's good. Whether you want to throw that out the window because you have the chance to grab an all-NBA caliber point guard, you have to at least look into it, right? So I don't know what that would cost. We don't know what the parameters of a trade would be right now. We don't know what the other competitive offers may be around the league. But the Kings need a franchise star. They need somebody to galvanize the team, the locker room, the fan base. I don't think, you know, I'm not the biggest Kyrie Irving fan in the world, but I think you're obligated to look into that.
Howard, if the Cavaliers were to pull a trigger and make a move granting Kyrie's request, would you think they would go for a trade like a De'Aaron Fox, someone, a young piece to potentially start a rebuild or get a head start on a rebuild right now? Or would they rather go out and get a win-now guy to pair with LeBron to try and make another run?
See, this is why the timing of this trade demand is so problematic and, I think, foolish. Foolish for Kyrie, foolish and for the positions putting the Cavaliers in as well, because to your question, and it is the most important question for the Cavaliers, what kind of trade are you looking for? You're trading Kyrie Irving, assuming you're doing it. There will be great offers out there. There will be competitive offers. He's got 2 years left. That's enough that you can, I think, extract some pretty good payment for him. But If you're a team that's in a teardown mode, you know what you do. You go for young players and draft picks, as many draft picks as you can get. But this is not a teardown team, and you can't just assume LeBron's leaving next summer. And if you blow this trade and you get the wrong package, you may just push LeBron right out the door. You have still the core of a team that just went to three straight finals. If you have to trade Kyrie Irving with LeBron there one more year, I think it's still your obligation to maximize, whether it's 1 year, whether you think LeBron might sign up for another one after that, you still have to, you're obligated to keep a championship caliber team around him. Anything short of that, and now you're the one pushing him out the door. So I don't think the De'Aaron Fox and some other young players and draft picks would be the way for them to go. I think that they need to get, you know, I don't know if, because Miami's on his list, right? Would Dragic and a package built around Dragic and picks or something, would that work? Because now you've got a veteran coming in, maybe, but you know, on the flip side of it, if LeBron leaves in 2018 and you went for the short-term package instead of the package of youth and draft picks, now you are short-circuiting your future a little bit. So they really are between a rock and a hard place.
Howard Beck, writer for the Bleacher Report, joining us this morning on The Drive. LeBron has a no-trade clause. We all know that. He's one of only three players in the league, Dirk as well as Carmelo Anthony. And a lot of the rumors the last week or two has been about Carmelo Anthony and his desire to join the Houston Rockets. He would waive that no-trade clause specifically to go to Houston, but then that seemed to be on hold when Scott Perry took over as the general manager there. What is happening right now in New York, and what do you think the likelihood of Carmelo Anthony being on the Knicks is once the season starts?
That one is interesting. Yeah, Carmelo is ready to go. He hadn't been for years,
right,
but he's certainly ready to go now. He's lost faith in this franchise, and I think he realizes at age 33, if he's ever going to compete for anything at any meaningful level again, he's better off elsewhere. And the Knicks, I think, rightly had concluded a while ago that they were better off rebuilding around Kristaps Porzingis and moving on from Carmelo. Just because they all want that doesn't mean it's going to happen. The no-trade clause is an issue. That's on the Knicks for granting it in the first place. The desire of the Rockets to have Carmelo is great, but again, the pieces aren't there. You have to deal with all the cap rules. You have to deal with the Knicks needing to get the right kind of package back. You need to deal with the Rockets needing to offload Ryan Anderson's contract that the Knicks don't want to take. Now you need a third team. It's complicated. And if it weren't complicated, it probably would have already been done by now, because you have three parties that want this to happen. The Rockets want Carmelo. The Knicks would love to trade Carmelo, and Carmelo would love to go to the Rockets. It hasn't happened yet because it's complicated. Whether they can find the right solution, and that will answer your question as to whether or not Carmelo Anthony's in a Knicks uniform come October.
One of the craziest things about this story and how it's developed, I can understand how Carmelo Anthony would target Houston as a destination just based on the roster and what they could potentially do in the West. However, the most confusing part of this is the fact that Mike D'Antoni is the coach there. Because we all know that there were reports. Yeah. It came out. Mike D'Antoni straight out said it. I believe it was just as early as March that he left because of Carmelo Anthony. And then you look at the fact that Melo now is saying, hey, I want to go to Houston, and we've squashed this beef. How much of that is true, and how much of it do you think is maybe a little short-sighted in the sense that, okay, you guys didn't get along before. He's still the same coach. What changes?
Well, it's a perfectly valid question, but a lot has changed. Mike D'Antoni has not fundamentally changed how he coaches. Carmelo has not fundamentally changed how he plays, and that was the source of their tension.
Yep.
Here in New York 5 years ago, but it's been 5 years. Carmelo's 33 now. He has less standing to say it's got to be all about me and the offense has to be built around me and I can't adapt. He's 33. He's on the downside, and he's going to a team, the Rockets, assuming this happens, where James Harden is absolutely the number one, and Carmelo Anthony is not in any position to argue that point. They just brought in Chris Paul, who is now the number two, and Carmelo and Chris Paul are also good friends. So the fact that these guys would be coming together with Carmelo as the third man in, I think, you know, both chronologically and in terms of where he would fit into that offense, there's less room for tension or argument with the coach at that point. Because, you know, here in New York, Mike D'Antoni had to deal with, you know, wanting to run a system that was not going to cater to Carmelo, but Carmelo's the franchise player. Mm-hmm. You have tension right from the get-go. In Houston, they've established the way they're playing. It works great because James Harden plays that way. It will work great with Chris Paul there. Carmelo just has to bend to the system at that point. And his best times in the NBA, his best years, have been playing with dominant and personality dominant, not just dominant play, all-star type point guards. Jason Kidd in New York for one season, Chauncey Billups in Denver and New York, because Carmelo needs to be held accountable by somebody he respects, you know, preferably another player. And that's what those guys did. That's what Chris Paul can do, which, again, removes the need for Mike D'Antoni to be the one saying, hey, move the ball.
Howard, going back to LeBron really quick, Stephen A. Smith reported or said that he's heard from his sources that LeBron himself could have been or was the one to leak this news about Kyrie wanting to be traded. Have you heard anything to prove that that is true, and have, or is that something that you believe LeBron would do or is capable of?
I the answer to all of those questions is I don't know.
Well, and really, I mean, I guess, Matt, to just kind of make the point here, it was that Kyrie Irving's camp believed that LeBron was the one. Stephen A. Smith said that he didn't believe it. He wasn't sure. He wasn't going to say that that's what happened. But without a doubt, Howard, things are just a little bit crazy right now in Cleveland. And no matter what, all the drama, they're still the best team in the East. So there's just going to be so much news and so much attention focused on them. And we just have to sit back and see how it plays out, really.
Yeah, no, at this point, that's the thing. It's you know, Cleveland has to determine what their path forward is. They've got a new GM, Kobe Altman, who's mm-hmm. a really bright guy. He's just 34, but he's just thrust into, like, the craziest situation, going from, you know, the third in command in that front office to all of a sudden being promoted and with all of this going on. So, you know, the Cavaliers, look, they have time. It's July 24th. This doesn't have to happen tomorrow, mm-hmm. but there's a lot for them to figure out. And, yeah, I think it's going to be some time before we know how this resolves itself.
Howard, thank you so much for taking the time to join us this morning. You guys can find him on Twitter at Howard Beck. You can read him at BleacherReport.com. We appreciate your time. We'll be talking to you again soon, hopefully this offseason before things get underway.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
All right. Have a good one, Howard. Well, there you go. I mean, the crazy thing about everything that's going on right now in the NBA is that we have to put this in perspective. We're talking about the drama and chaos in Cleveland, and I think there's one thing we can all agree on. Despite everything that's going on, they're still the best team in the East and the team that's favorited to go back to a 4 straight NBA Finals. We're looking at the potential of the Warriors and the Cavs meeting again in the Finals. And I thought one of the best points that he made, Matt, was he responded to you. The point is that this team is the best in the East right now. And the choice that they make with Kyrie Irving, given the fact that he's requested a trade, is going to say a lot. Because I'm kind of with him in the sense that you know you have LeBron right now. You don't know if you're going to have LeBron the next year. You have to try and do everything you can to win now. And to me, that does not mean trying to get like a young De'Aaron Fox or, you know, assets that you can develop. They have to take that chance and do it now.
How prestigious is it to be the best in the East? I mean, Boston technically was the best in the East last year, and they got their butts kicked by Cleveland. So
yeah, that doesn't
what
matter.
What does that really
that
mean?
That doesn't matter, because as much as I was ragging on Cleveland because they really did not play well the last 2 months of the NBA regular season, when you go into the playoffs and you've got a seven-game series against any team in the East and you have LeBron James on your team, things change drastically.
But the best in the East can't even sniff the best of the West.
Yeah, well, we'll see right now. I'm the only two teams that I'm really curious about is Boston and Washington, especially since Washington was able to lock up Otto Porter Jr. That was a big piece to me. But whatever happens with Kyrie, that could maybe increase the odds for Boston and Washington and make it more of a legitimate chance. We just have to sit back and wait and see what Cleveland decides to do. And Kobe Altman, I do not envy the situation that he's in right now. Thanks to Howard Beck for joining us. Coming up next, we're going to get into the British Open a little bit. Jordan Spieth had some heroics to be able to come out and win the whole thing yesterday. We're going to play some sound from that and maybe a little bit more on the conversation. Is he the most exciting player in golf since Tiger Woods? Not better, most exciting. All that when we come back on The Drive.